Keeping Democracy Alive with Bert Cohen.
Check for pulse.
Stand clear. Push to shock.
So yes, there's a huge gap between public opinion and public policy. That people don't feel that they can do very much.
You know what this is? This is a very Hamiltonian system. Alexander Hamilton being the guy here in a very un-Jeffersonian.
In the case of the Republicans, it's dramatically the opposite. But even in the case of the Democrats.
An absolute typhoon of terror against African Americans in the South.
America's fascists are those people who think that Wall Street comes first and the American people come second.
We're really seen as a financial sector that's gotten out of hand.
The shooting, the violence, that is not the drug problem. That is, in fact, the drug policy problem.
I speak tonight for the dignity of man.
Keeping democracy alive, it's a little bit tough these days, but we're all doing it together. One of the ingredients generally thought of as necessary for a strong, vibrant American economy is increased global trade. The world would buy more of what we make here, and more people have jobs. And in the meantime, there is what's called constructive engagement, where we get to have some say over human rights and working conditions in the countries with which we do business, right? Well, you may remember the North American Free Trade Agreement, NAFTA, pushed by centrist Democrats. It didn't exactly work out that way. Cost a lot of American jobs. Now there's something that at least looks far more damaging to both American jobs and our democracy itself. It's called the Trans-Pacific Partnership, has been called NAFTA on steroids. It will change everything and rewrite the rules for doing business for the 21st century. It has specifically and intentionally been kept secret from the American public. Our guest on Keeping Democracy Alive today is Deirdre Fulton. Deirdre, thanks for being with us.
Thank you for having me.
Deirdre is staff writer for CommonDreams.org, where she writes about the environment, social justice, and progressive policy. Previously, she worked as an editor and writer for the Portland Phoenix and the Boston Phoenix, where she was honored by the New England Press Association and the Association of Alternative News Weeklies. I guess that doesn't mean Zap Comics. She has written recently on Common Dreams about the ominous realities of the Trans-Pacific Partnership. Thanks again for being with us, Deirdre. First off, what is the Trans-Pacific Partnership? When did the effort begin, and who and what interests have been involved in trying to bring this forward?
Well, the Trans-Pacific Partnership, or the TPP, is a massive so-called free trade agreement currently being negotiated by the United States and 11 other Pacific Rim countries, including Australia, Canada, Japan, Vietnam, and others. And it's been negotiated largely behind closed doors between not only the trade ministers of the 12 countries that are involved, but also by hundreds of corporate lobbyists. So while the American public and lawmakers, elected officials, only know so far what's been leaked about the agreement, corporations and some select government officials have been brokering this deal for years now. If it went through, the TPP would represent about 40% of the global economy.
Wow. That's an unbelievable amount of the global economy.
Yes.
So this Trans-Pacific Partnership, TPP, has been called NAFTA on steroids. When did NAFTA happen? How was it sold to the American people? And how did it work out for the American economy?
Right. NAFTA, a lot of the TPP talking points are the same as the ones that were used to push NAFTA in the 1990s. And the group Public Citizen, the watchdog group Public Citizen, has pointed out that, as you noted, a lot of the things that people said NAFTA would do, it hasn't done. It resulted in the offshoring of jobs. It resulted in environmental and public health protections being eroded. And the TPP, as you said, has been called NAFTA on steroids and is considered by some people to be actually much worse.
Wow. Well, before we look too much at that, in terms of how NAFTA worked out, how the middle class that needed the jobs here in America, and then there's the corporate entities that, organize it all and stand to profit from it. Who made out better here? And, just talking about NAFTA, the corporations that organized it or the middle class?
Certainly the corporations that pushed for it. I mean, billions of tax dollars were offshored. Corporations were allowed to get around environmental and worker protections. For example, the NAFTA version forced governments to pay hundreds of millions to corporations after suits against toxic bans and land use policies. So corporations were able to sue governments to say, hey, these regulations aren't working out for us. And under NAFTA, governments have had to pay significant amounts of money to corporations. NAFTA has also, increased the trade deficit, costing more than 5 million jobs, and it's led to the loss, some people say, of more than 50,000 manufacturing plants in the U.S.
Manufacturing plants, not just the jobs.
Right.
Wow.
Right.
Huge, huge numbers. And I believe this was engineered and brought to us by those Democratic centrists, Bill Clinton and Al Gore. Is that right?
Precisely, yes.
Yeah, sometime in the 90s. Was it publicly discussed? Did Congress get to discuss NAFTA?
So there's a there's something called Trade Promotion Authority, which is known more widespread as Fast Track.
Mm-hmm.
And Fast Track Authority, which was used to push through both NAFTA and the Korea FTA, Free Trade Agreement, in 2011, Fast Track basically hands over trade negotiating powers from Congress to the executive branch. So essentially, if Fast Track goes through and Congress is supposed to take it up as soon as they get back from Easter recess on April 13th, if Fast Track is approved, all that Congress will be able to do with these enormous trade deals is vote yes or no. So they won't be able to offer any amendments. They won't be able to debate specific provisions buried within, these hundreds of pages of documents. They'll just be able to give an up or down vote, and then the trade deal would go on to President Obama, who does support the TPP and has been pushing hard for a fast track authority.
That's really amazing. And if you just tuned in to Keeping Democracy Alive, we're talking about the Trans-Pacific Partnership. You talk to people, who even follow politics. It's virtually unknown, and it's huge, absolutely huge. It could tremendous effects on the world economy as well as a lot of American jobs. And it's been done absolutely in secret. There's kind of two parts to the secret aspect of it. There's the agreement itself, and then, as you describe, the fast track. Larry Cohen, no relation, who's president of Communication Workers of America, called it secrecy on top of secrecy. Is that an accurate phrase? Why would he call it that?
Well, absolutely. I mean, because not only are the deals being negotiated in secret by the beneficiaries of the very deals, but then there's another level of secrecy in that, the American public not only does it not know the contents of the potential deals, but also it just doesn't even know how the deals are being brokered. The layer of secrecy that Congress and our elected officials aren't even able to speak in an informed way about the deals because they don't even know what they contain. And it's very troubling that the people who are going to be voting on these deals don't even really know what they contain in many cases.
Why is it being done so secretly, even from our members of Congress in the Senate and in the House? Is there a lot of precedent for this? Fast track is something that you occasionally hear about. Tell us about how often that is, how rare this incredible secrecy is.
Yeah, well, both Presidents Clinton and Bush used fast track, and like I said, Obama is hoping to. Fast track would apply not just to the TPP, but it basically applies for a number of years. So were fast track authority to be approved, not only would the TPP stand a better chance of sailing through Congress, but other trade deals that are currently being negotiated, such as the TTIP, which is a separate enormous trade deal between the U.S. and the EU. That stands for the Transatlantic Trade and Investment Partnership.
Mm.
That would also be covered by fast track, as would any other deals that came up moving forward.
If you just tuned in to Keeping Democracy Alive, our guest today is Deirdre Fulton with CommonDreams.org, and we're talking about TPP, the Trans-Pacific Partnership. Tell us, if you would please, about the role of Republican senators like Majority Leader Mitch McConnell in this whole thing. Is he being kept in the dark, too, or what is his role?
Well, Mitch McConnell has said that he is eager to move forward with TPP. Both McConnell, Senator Orrin Hatch, Representative Paul Ryan, they've all been really pushing for TPP and fast track authority, which marks a kind of interesting collaboration between the Obama administration and some high ranking Republicans.
Uh-huh.
There is also a smaller sector of the right wing that is opposed to TPP, specifically because of the transparency with which it's been negotiated, as well as because of concerns that the U.S. would be giving up some of its sovereignty
right.
if it entered into
right.
such a deal, and also because there are some Tea Party Republicans who are wary of handing over any additional authority to President Obama and the executive branch. There are some so-called centrist Democrats who are supporting the TPP and fast track, but by and large, there are a growing number of progressives on the left, who both in and out of Congress, who are raising opposition, including Massachusetts Senator Elizabeth Warren
yeah.
and Vermont Senator Bernie Sanders.
At least one of whom seems to be planning on running for president.
At least one.
let's hope so. It'd be nice if both of them did. But you know, the subject of sovereignty, that's a very, very basic, old-fashioned idea that appeals and carries a lot of weight, not just with people on the left, but I would think this might be an area where liberals and progressives could possibly team up with Tea Partiers, with people on the right who talk about states' rights, which are clearly targeted by this. You know, our right to have our own laws that we decide on are trumped very much by the Trans-Pacific Partnership. Is there evidence of people on the right participating in protesting this and fighting back, or are they just ignoring this because their funders, like the Koch brothers, haven't brought it up? What's your sense of what the people on the right are doing? You would think this would fire them up a bit.
Right. And I think, I think that you're absolutely right that there is a small sector that is rising up for exactly the reasons that you said, because of sovereignty, because of states' rights, because of not wanting to potentially have to align our laws with those of other countries. However, you know, by and large, the opposition is coming from the left and from progressives. One thing that a lot of people across the board have brought up is the issue of investor-state dispute settlements, or ISDS clauses.
Mm-hmm.
And these are those kind of corporate tribunals at which companies and investors would be able to challenge regulations and government actions before these independent tribunals. So effectively skirting, giving corporations the ability to skirt government regulations and sort of make their own rules. You know, ostensibly this is supposed to you know, give corporations some power to promote their own interests, but of course it just gives greater priority to protecting corporate interests than some of the consumer protections that are in place.
Now, that is worth focusing on a little bit more, the investor-state dispute settlement aspect of the Trans-Pacific Partnership, called the ISDS. I know that Senator Elizabeth Warren and Bernie Sanders have been raising quite a ruckus about that. This is a process, and it's been said that ISDS is just a fancy way to give corporations a special legal system for corporations that circumvents democratically accountable laws and courts. I mean, it sounds without precedence. And if people knew about this stuff, it would be an outrage, I think.
Yeah, it basically says that if corporations feel like their profits have been harmed by some sort of regulation, and again, this can be environmental regulations, public health regulations, you know, wage regulations. ISDS lets them, you know, circumvent a country's government and go directly to some sort of international tribunal that exists purely so that corporations' grievances can be heard.
And it just amazes me that any American legislator could possibly support this, left or right. Is it as obvious as it seems that it's the corporations that fund their campaigns that are calling the shots, and they you know, shove aside any notion of actual democracy or a Republican government with a small R? It's just, how can they do this to give corporations their way of circumventing local laws? It's, are they asleep at the switch? Do they know what they're doing here?
It certainly seems that way. I mean, Elizabeth Warren has said that that, you know, the deal has to be secret because if the American people knew what was actually in it or in deals like this, they would be opposed. And it certainly seems, you know, the more layers you peel away, as you know, WikiLeaks has helped us do by leaking huge chunks and chapters of the draft text. The more layers you peel away, the sort of more nefarious it seems.
I was reading that WikiLeaks founder Julian Assange said that part of the TPP is to create an unaccountable supranational court for multinationals to sue states. I'm just thinking of my friends on the right, you know, trying to picture this, to create an unaccountable, supranational, above-national court for multinationals to sue states. This is not democracy. This is, it seems to me, when we had the War of Independence in the 1770s, this was precisely what we fought a war against, so that we could call the shots ourselves. Am I overreacting here? Is this hyperbole that we're talking about here, or is this really real?
It's really real, and which is why, you know, conservatives who carry on about U.S. sovereignty should be, and in some cases are outraged. You know, in addition to obviously the coalition on the left. I mean, increasingly, and I think opposition is growing. I actually just wrote a story today about there's a sort of quote-unquote AstroTurf organization supposedly representing progressives who support the Fast Track and TPP.
Oh my.
And a large group of organizations from the left, including Public Citizen, Move On, Credo Action,
right.
Democracy for America, held a call yesterday saying, you know, no progressive who calls, no one who calls him or herself a progressive is in favor of these deals. And so I hope that, you know, as we get closer to Congress taking up Fast Track, you know, more and more people become informed. But it's hard, you know, it's an enormous, dense deal and topic, and so I think it's hard for people to really understand what's at stake.
Yeah, and it's hard to believe so much could be at stake here. What just so that people can be aware, is there a name of this AstroTurf group, this
yes.
faux progressives?
Yes, so the website that was created by this political consulting firm is called Progressive Coalition for American Jobs, but as Lori Wallach of Public Citizens Global Trade Watch said, you know, this is an AstroTurf operation, and in fact, you know, millions of people nationwide are engaging their members of Congress to oppose Fast Track. You know, and Neil Sroka of Democracy for America said, the fact is you can be a progressive committed to fighting for working families, or you can be for this massive job-killing trade deal, but you can't be both.
And people need to know that these AstroTurf things are, you know, I remember years ago there was a some legislation to loosen up clean air laws, and they called themselves the Blue Sky Initiative or something like that. They just make up this stuff, pretty names. It's doublespeak. It's 1984, and getting into the not to the weeds here, but into the actual players in the Senate. A key player is on the Senate Finance Committee, which has yet, as I understand, to make a recommendation to the full Senate on this, is Oregon Senator Ron Wyden. You describe him as having, quote, somewhat wobbly shoulders. Is this from the heavy burden? He's right there. I mean, Oregon is right there in the Pacific Rim. Tell it, why does he have wobbly shoulders? Why is his role so important, and what is he doing?
Well, Ron Wyden has been a good ally for, especially for internet, open internet advocates.
Yeah, a lot of things.
Who are working for, you know, internet freedom, and those groups, along with many others, see him as kind of, a key player, if not the key Democrat, mm-hmm. in all of this, because he's the ranking member of the Finance Committee, out of which the Fast Track legislation will come,
mm-hmm.
And he could, you know, he could stand up before Fast Track goes through and say, you know, and either oppose Fast Track outright, or some people have said that he's working behind the scenes to get, you know, to get protective provisions included in Fast Track, although most who oppose TPP and Fast Track say that nothing of that nature could go far enough.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, so there have been all of these campaigns over the last few weeks calling on him to reject Fast Track and give Congress a chance to really substantively debate these issues.
And what do you think he's going to do?
well, Orrin Hatch said last week that Orrin Hatch, who's the chair, the Republican chair of that committee, said that he and Wyden were coming very close to reaching an agreement.
Ew.
So I'm not terribly optimistic, but certainly with this public pressure, anything could happen at the last moment.
And that is true that, you know, we have the corporate funders here that have tremendous power over our elected representatives. However, they still need our votes. We have not completely lost democracy quite yet. They, no matter how much money is pumped into their coffers, they still need to get the votes. And if they anger the public, they're not going to get the votes. And they absolutely know this. And we would expect the, you know, openly corporatist Republicans to be in lockstep with their benefactors on this proposal. What about the Democratic presidential candidates, and I put that in plural? In her memoir, Hard Choices, one of the candidates, Hillary Clinton, wrote of the Trans-Pacific Partnership. She said, quote, "Its high standards, if implemented and enforced, should benefit American businesses and workers." So she's pretty much in favor of the Trans-Pacific Partnership. Bill Clinton's blue dog centrist Democrats from the 1990s really set the stage, I think, for a lot of this pro-corporate, anti-democratic with a small D trajectory. What do you know about Hillary Clinton on this? And obviously there's Elizabeth Warren, who seems to indicate she's not really running, but she is certainly a big player in the United States Senate. There's also Governor Martin O'Malley and former U.S. Senator Jim Webb. What do we know about any of these people?
Sure. Well, I mean, there have been people who have said already that, you know, NAFTA will be a thorn in Hillary Clinton's side.
Among many things.
You know, if and when she actually receives the nomination and runs. She, you know, NAFTA is a dominant symbol of the Clinton legacy.
Mm-hmm.
And she's been largely silent on the TPP. I think that she's let more progressive members of the party do a lot of the speaking for her, unfortunately.
Mm-hmm.
You know, but if people look at the legacy of NAFTA and the loss of so many jobs and the increase of income inequality, you know, she'll definitely have to answer for those, and especially if they're presented right next to, you know, the potential outcomes of the TPP. I'm not actually sure where O'Malley or Webb stands on this question, which is a very good one. I'll have to look into that. There is an alternative, though, that has been put forward. The Congressional Progressive Caucus put forward an alternative trade vision about a month ago or so, and that just goes to show that, you know, we can negotiate, or they put forth that it is possible to negotiate these huge multinational trade deals without, you know, putting workers' rights, environmental rights at risk. Their proposed model calls for fast track authority to be replaced altogether by a system that embraces transparency and gives Congress a, quote, robust role in developing trade policy, which I think is a pretty reasonable suggestion.
I'd say.
It also calls for, you know, meaningful labor protections that are understood by people, you know, across countries, across nations, and are properly enforced. You know, it does away with this ISDS, corporate tribunals idea. You know, it's kind of, when you read it, it just seems like basic common sense and a model around which U.S. trade policy would be based instead of this sort of clandestine, corporate-dominated TPP system.
It's just kind of yielding what is the power of the states and the power of the courts to a supranational tribunal. The more you look at it, the more surprising it gets. What are there other Democratic senators? There's just quite a few Democratic senators there. Have they been quiet? Are they and actually, as we're talking about the Democratic senators, oftentimes members of the president's party don't want to buck the president. And so what about the Obama administration on this? The Obama administration and the Democrats in the U.S. Senate, aside from Elizabeth Warren and independent Bernie Sanders. So Obama and the Democratic senators, what are they doing?
Sure. Well, the Obama administration has come out all hands on deck to garner support for TPP and Fast Track. The Obama administration made it clear, I think, you know, quite a while ago that it was going to buck its base and is wholeheartedly embracing the TPP, sent a number of cabinet members out to sort of lobby Congress members. So the Obama administration is not letting up, and in fact is doing all it can to sway lawmakers. About 150 House Democrats have signed a letter opposing the use of fast-track procedures.
No good.
So they're not talking specifically about the TPP, but they have said that fast-track is, you know, not appropriate for 21st century trade agreements and must be replaced. And so, again, about 150 House Democrats have signed that. So that's
good.
That's reassuring.
Yeah. So
originally, you know, a fast track was going to be taken up, they thought, earlier this year, but the fact that they pushed it off until April indicates that perhaps they are having trouble rounding up the vote. That said, I think that we can expect that they will vote on fast track, like I said, almost immediately upon returning in mid-April, because to wait any longer, I think, would interfere with, you know, the 2016 election cycle.
Can't mess up with that. If you just tuned in, Keeping Democracy Alive, Bert Cohen here. Our guest today is Deirdre Fulton, who writes with CommonDreams.org. We're talking about the very secretive thing you probably never heard of, Trans-Pacific Partnership. It's a very, very big deal in so many ways in terms of American jobs, in terms of American sovereignty, in terms of American jobs. Does the Trans-Pacific Partnership give multinational corporations or supranational corporations advantages over other strictly American corporations in terms of the right to challenge U.S. laws and regulation? What about, I mean, we all talk about think globally, act locally. We want local businesses to thrive. Are local, strictly American businesses actually put at a disadvantage specifically because of the TPP?
I think that it would. I mean, I think that, you know, there are probably, you know, thousands of firms, you know, multinational firms that would benefit from these types of trade deals. But there are lots of other small businesses who don't have those advantages, who can't afford to, you know, to go to international tribunals,
right,
to make their case. You know, the same way that I think the average American worker will be disadvantaged by fast track and the TPP. I think that we can assume that small businesses would sort of meet the same fate. Another key point that critics bring up is how big pharma and big pharmaceutical companies, corporate pharmaceutical companies, would benefit from the TPP. They're industry favoring additions to that section that would benefit pharmaceutical companies and limit access to important medicines, some say, such as cancer drugs or HIV/AIDS drugs. You know, there are some serious public health implications as well.
Well, wow, that's really, tell us about that. How could, what about TPP would, as you say, limit some access to important life-saving drugs for the American people? Say more about that. Yeah, that's pretty amazing.
So a group of doctors led by Doctors Without Borders, the international humanitarian organization, in 2014, they started raising their voices against what they said provisions that were designed to delay the introduction of low-cost generic medicines. So it would extend and reinforce pharmaceutical corporations' monopolies on certain drugs and restrict the abilities of governments to protect access to lower-cost medicines. So Doctors Without Borders said that higher medicine prices cost lives in countries at every level of economic development, and the TPP regulations in question should be rejected outright. There was another protest earlier this year, AIDS activists in particular, calling attention to the same sort of issues, saying that U.S. corporations were seeking through the TPP to get stronger and longer patent monopolies, which again would limit access around the world to generics, which are obviously cheaper.
The lack of ethics there is absolutely breathtaking to me. All just diving in for unbelievable greed. It's almost like, nah, this can't be true. It can't really be that bad.
I mean, cancer drugs, HIV drugs, the environment, fracking, all of these things. It's really unbelievable.
Yeah, I've noticed that Public Citizens Global Trade Watch said that TPP, quote, gives foreign investors expansive new substantive and procedural rights and privileges not available to domestic firms under domestic laws. Is that an overstatement?
No, I mean, and Public Citizen has been, I think, probably one of the best, if not the best, groups on analyzing what's included in these leaked chapters. Then they've really picked up on a lot of the problems. They also talk about food safety and how the TPP would require us to allow food imports if the exporting country claims that their safety regime is equivalent to ours, which could be true or could not be true, and this could also apply to pesticide use and sustainable seafood sorts of issues. It's really across the board. Every single aspect of our lives could be impacted by these deals.
It's almost as if, and again, it's so hard to believe this could be true. It's almost as if it's some kind of coup, a corporate coup, taking over power of the United States, and it just seems that's what the right wing, the honest right wing, has been worried about for a long, long time, giving up our sovereignty, and yet.
Mm-hmm. I mean, it would elevate corporations it would give corporations the same. The same benefits as governments enjoy. It's basically giving sovereignty to some foreign corporations. And, as we know in the United States, we've ruled that corporations are people,
right.
But apparently TPP would also say that corporations are governments.
They're a law unto themselves. And we talk about laws here and courts. Tell us about the tribunals. Who would judge in cases that the corporations affected under the TPP might bring? So they'd bring them the cases to tribunals. There could be apparently lawsuits against the United States, so that the grounds for a lawsuit might actually mean so that if there's a possible loss of expected future profits, the participants in the Trans-Pacific Partnership could take the case. Doesn't seem like much of a case.
Yes, these tribunals are three private lawyers, unaccountable to any electorate. They're just, they're presumably, and again, like all of this is, or a lot of this is speculation because we're not sure exactly what's going to be included in the final negotiations, but presumably, they're just appointed, perhaps by the very corporations who are involved in these negotiations. They're not; these are going to be unprecedented tribunals, so they won't have any other previous opinions to go back on.
Oh,
and there's no appeal process.
So, any precedent that exists in American jurisprudence through the Supreme Court doesn't matter.
Exactly, and so then if a tribunal rules against a policy, a government, presumably the fines, quote unquote, that the government would pay would be taxpayer money that then we would be paying to foreign or multinational firms.
Wow. If you just tuned in to Keeping Democracy Alive, seems sometimes just barely by a thread we're keeping. This Trans-Pacific Partnership is a serious threat to democracy. I don't think there's any question about that. And it's been kept secret because it is such a huge threat to democracy. Our guest today is Deirdre Fulton, writer with CommonDreams.org, who's written a fair amount about this and looked into this. We always like to think that people who have a stake in something ought to be able to have a say in decisions about that thing. Who are some of the stakeholders that have been left out of this negotiating process?
Well, pretty much anybody who's not a corporate lobbyist or a high-ranking government trade negotiator.
There's unions, there's environmental people who work
the
in these
environmental community, the doctors and nurses whose jobs would be affected by these sorts of things, and of course, again, our elected officials, the people who will presume, ostensibly be voting on these very deals. The organized labor community, of course, has been left out of these negotiations entirely, which is why, labor affiliations like the AFL-CIO have come out strongly in opposition to Fast Track and to the TPP, and have organized their own campaign against them because of how the TPP could potentially affect wages. And that's one of the things I wrote earlier this week. On Monday evening, the Seattle City Council voted on a resolution, unanimously approved a resolution stating not only its opposition to Fast Track, but also kind of asserting some of the good labor practices and environmental practices that have been established in Seattle, and saying that if the TPP and other trade deals didn't, respect and honor those fair trade principles. And so I was talking about Seattle.
They're right there on the Pacific Rim.
Exactly. They're a very trade-dependent state. Their ports would be dealing with a lot of the imports and exports that would be covered by these sorts of trade deals. And so they said, no way, we want, we want more input. We want our congressional delegation to have more input. We want these trade deals to respect the sorts of wage protections and environmental protections that our city has put in place, including the $15 minimum wage.
Uh-huh.
And if the trade deals don't allow us to continue, working under those principles, we call on our congressional delegation to reject it. They're not the only city that has done that. Bellingham, Washington,
uh-huh,
voted on a similar resolution, and I wouldn't be surprised if we see other cities taking such symbolic stances. Of course, they are only symbolic, but it does, a unanimous approval of such a resolution, I think, is important.
And of course, San Francisco and Los Angeles. Mm-hmm. San Francisco does a lot of trade there. I wonder how. And there's a few interesting people there. I wonder what's happening there. Probably some action as well. And I'm guessing that the motivation for the Trans-Pacific Partnership comes from corporate investments in developing countries, that they've sometimes been nationalized and they've lost entirely all their profits. And does it come from that? That's a big loss for them when, they put in money and invest in development of some project in a developing country, and then some government comes in and nationalizes those assets. But perhaps one difference is that last time I checked, the U.S. is not exactly a third world developing country. We have a pretty stable government. Is this some of the source of the TPP, that these guys are worried about their profits given this background?
Yeah, I think that as countries continue to strengthen their environmental protections, worker protections, raising wages, know, these are all things that that threaten big multinational corporations. And when you have when you have countries like, you know, Vietnam and, you know, others that are part of this agreement, that would be part of this agreement, you know, making their own rules better, corporations see that as a threat. And I think that that's a big reason for their support and for their pushing to be so closely involved in the negotiations.
Yeah, but they want to have all that power over we the people of the United States. And it sounds to me like it fits into the context of the overall race to the bottom that's been going on for a long time. Higher profits, lower wages, fewer environmental regulations, and health and safety laws. It sounds like it fits quite nicely with that race to the bottom.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I mean, you know, another important issue is that, or another important thing to note is that the TPP, you know, the U.S. already has free trade agreements with a lot of the TPP countries, you know, which highlights the fact that this is mainly about new corporate rights and not not necessarily trade.
Ah, so we already have trade agreements. That's true.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Well, so the Asian nations on the western side of the Pacific, obviously there's Japan, China, Korea, places like that, do they... have they been involved in the crafting of this, or is it, again, supranational corporations that may or may not locate there?
There have been protests all around the world, you know, most especially I'm thinking of in Australia and Canada, but also in Japan, against what the TPP represents. You know, Japan has said, though, I think that the Obama administration is feeling pressure now because Japan has said that it won't continue negotiations until Fast Track is approved because they, I'm sure, are worried that whatever sort of beneficial provisions are included in a draft, they would perhaps be whittled away by Congress if Congress had more of a say. And so both Australia and Japan are really pushing now for Fast Track. Because I think that the countries just really want to get this done, as this is such a, you know, huge, like I said, 40% of the world's economy. I think that just as the corporations have influence here in the U.S., they do all over the world.
And one criticism has been that the corporatists, corporate rulers, are trying to use such treaties to actually supersede the limitations of our Constitution itself. That's not an overstatement, I guess. It's amazing, really. All right, I want to spend a few minutes. I want to give people tools to take action on this.
Great.
People need to understand what they can do. I understand that Senator Bernie Sanders has put a petition on Credo Action that anyone and everyone can sign, and that says to make secret trade agreements public, demand that the text of the Trans-Pacific Partnership and the Transatlantic Trade and Investment Partnership that you referred to be made public immediately so that we and Congress can reach them. Talk about how can people fight back.
Great. Well, I think the first thing that people need to do is learn more and educate themselves, because again, this is such a huge, huge issue, huge document. And like I said, I think the Public Citizen has done a great job at this. And so, if you go to www.citizen.org/TPP, you'll find just a great roundup. And also at Common Dreams /TPP, you'll also find a lot of great materials. A lot of people are asking constituents to put pressure on their members of Congress, like you said, to not approve Fast Track. There are probably going to be, you know, more rallies and demonstrations as we get closer. Other groups that have been doing a good job on leading the opposition include the Electronic Frontier Foundation, which has done a lot of work on specifically what the TPP would mean for open internet and internet freedom. Like I said, the AFL-CIO and other labor organizations.
Wait, I gotta stop you here. How would it affect the net neutrality on the internet freedom? Would it adversely affect that as well?
I'm not sure actually how the FCC's new reclassification of the internet as a public utility would be affected, but there are definitely privacy concerns and intellectual property concerns, copyright issues, all of which affect that sort of, you know, that group, that coalition that cares about open internet. And that's a whole nother can of worms, a whole nother layer.
It's amazing. So I imagine there may be more organizations and ways that people can. And one thing I wanted to ask, oftentimes people need a bill number to call their senator or member of Congress, House of Representatives, to say, please vote no on HB or SB particular bill. Is there a bill number on this? But I guess they'll know Trans-Pacific Partnership.
Yeah, exactly. Well, because Fast Track will have to be dealt with before before the TPP, I think that just Fast Track, and because it hasn't come out of committee yet, I'm not sure that there's a specific bill number, because I think they're still working out the language. But but Fast Track, Trade Fast Track, or Trade Promotion Authority, which is the official name, that's what people are talking about right now. That's like kind of the next step.
What was that called again? Trade Authority?
Trade Promotion Authority.
Trade Promotion Authority, or
Fast Track. That's the official name for Fast Track.
So this Fast Track piece of legislation would have to go first through the Senate and then through the House, is that correct?
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Okay, so there's still time, people, and I'm sure that our elected representatives haven't heard from people, because nobody's heard of it. So if you, the listener, when you call them, you're going to make a big difference, because they're going to listen. Ooh, my constituents actually know about this. So this is something you really have some leverage on and can really have an effect on it. And there's still a little bit of time to do that. What else can people do? What else, what other tools are available to people who want to try to stop Fast Track and then the TPP?
Well, I think that another important thing to do would be to learn about the alternative that I mentioned. Because, you know, sometimes I think that it's not enough to say we don't want this, but I think that it's important to say what we would prefer instead is this. And so you can find information about the Congressional Progressive Caucus's alternative trade vision. I wrote a story about it, which I can actually send it to you, and you could put it up. And also the CPC website also will have information about that.
What's the website? Congressional Progressive Caucus?
Congressional Progressive Caucus.
And that's cpc.org, is that right?
Yeah, probably. I'm just looking it up real quick.
All right, we'll find it. And, of course, they can also go to commondreams.org and look for stuff written by Deirdre Fulton, who's been covering this. Thank you for doing that. And just go to commondreams.org. There's a lot on there about the TPP. Do you have more information?
Just check out what we're doing on Common Dreams, and be aware that that Congress expects to take this up just as soon as they return on April 13th. So we have a couple more weeks to hopefully make a difference.
And we can make a difference. We are not powerless. The powers that be want you to believe we are powerless. We are anything but powerless, and we got to stop that trend. Thank you so much. Very, very informative. Deirdre Fulton, staff writer for commondreams.org.
Thanks for having me.
We have the power, and we can fight the power, as the Isley brothers said. Thank you so much for listening. Keeping Democracy Alive, I'm Bert Cohen.